Find other great podcasts like this one at podmoth.network.
Love a good mystery that leaves you wanting more? Check out my podcast. Hi, I'm Kadra, the host of Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. I tell tales every single week that have left me perplexed. You'll hear true crime cases, mysterious disappearances, learn about cults, hear baffling sightings of cryptids, chilling paranormal encounters, and even dark and weird history. I release new episodes every Wednesday, and you can listen anywhere podcasts are available. I'm also on Patreon, and you can even watch me on YouTube. Perplexity, a Mystery Podcast. Stories that will leave you perplexed.
Are you tired of this reality? Us too. How about once a week you take a break and visit a different reality? In Jack Billings Presents Haunted Apartment Complex, we bring you a comedy podcast full of ghosts, werewolves, gentle vampires, and Frankenstein monstrosities made of 72 people stitched together. And somehow, that's not even the strange stuff. A proud member of the Podmoth Network. Every Tuesday, wherever you get your podcasts. There's nothing wrong with your audio. I've been a ghost this whole time. Shyamalan Twist!
Welcome back, everybody. Thanks for joining us once again for another brutal, bizarre, and boozy episode. How are you today,
Hi,
Mom?
Hi, friends. I'm good. How are you?
I am good. What story do you have for us today?
I have another brain story for us today.
Brain story.
Brain.
Okay. I'm just... It's vague, but I think it's not gross.
It's actually something that we talked about, I think it was 2 episodes ago. I'm going to be talking about synesthesia.
Oh, the song to color or whatever.
Yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
How about you? What have you got for us?
I'm going to be talking about Arlise Perry.
Arlise Perry? I don't know that name.
Yes. Interesting murder case. And to go with that, I have the... Let me get it pulled up. Oh, sorry, everybody. Hang on. Okay, there we go. So I have the ice pick cocktail.
Ice pick.
To make the ice pick, you take 1.5 ounces of vodka, 1 teaspoon sugar. I use simple syrup, though. 1/2 ounce of lemon juice and 1 cup of iced tea. Mix all of the ingredients together in a tall glass with ice and drink. Let's give it a try.
I use extra syrup in mine. I used sugar. It wasn't enough. And then I dumped simple syrup in it because it wasn't sweet enough for me.
Okay.
Because I like my...
What kind of tea did you use? I used the orange black tea that you gave me.
I used plain old Lipton.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's give it a try. I mean,
it's refreshing.
Hard not to be good. It's literally just tea with vodka in it.
I don't taste the vodka at all.
I usually use honey in my tea, but yeah, I mean, I use the Platinum 7X, and you can't taste that shit just straight.
Nope.
So it's a pretty good drink. I mean, it's literally just tea with vodka in it, but
and a little bit of lemon.
Yeah, I use honey in my tea instead of simple syrup, but this drink called for simple syrup, so.
Yeah.
And I just cold brewed. I didn't even make, like, tea. I just put a tea bag in a mason jar the day before.
Oh, nice.
So, Arlise K. DeKemma was born on February 22nd, 1955, in Bismarck, North Dakota, and raised in the small farming town of Linton, population a little over 1,500. That's how small the town was.
Tiny.
Yes.
Tiny town. Okay.
She was raised Christian, Midwestern values, and quiet community-based lifestyle. The daughter of a devout Lutheran parents, Lutheran parents, that's the right word. Arlise was described as sweet and thoughtful, the kind of person who went out of her way to make others feel loved and seen. Friends said she had rarely gotten angry, always found time for church, and held strong opinions about right and wrong. She attended Linton High School, where she was active in her church youth group and met her future husband, Bruce Perry, a high-achieving cerebral student. Where she met her husband, Bruce Perry, a high-achieving student, and the pair were opposites in some ways. Bruce was analytical and Arlise was emotional, but they connected over their love of music and their shared faith. The two married in August 1974, just months after graduation. They were both only 19.
Oh,
I couldn't
too
imagine.
Too young.
I'm going to be 24, and I couldn't imagine getting married right now.
No.
After their wedding, Bruce and Arlise moved to Palo Alto, California, so Bruce could attend Stanford University.
Oh, super smart.
Arlise found a job as a receptionist at a local law firm and spent her free time exploring the campus, attending church, and writing letters to her friends back home. But within 2 months of arriving in California, Arlise Perry would be found dead inside Stanford's Memorial Church in a murder so gruesome and symbolic it would baffle authorities for nearly 44 years.
Oh my God. Okay, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. Well, it's the brutal part of the podcast. Someone's going to get killed.
I know, but I don't know what I was thinking.
On the night of October 12th, 1974, Arlise and Bruce took a walk around the Stanford campus. It was late, nearly 11 p.m., and the campus was mostly quiet. They reportedly heard witnesses saw them having a verbal argument, but not like anything serious. It seemed like it was about car maintenance. And Bruce said Arlise decided to stop by Memorial Church and pray and clear her head. The church, located at the heart of Stanford's campus, is a massive, ornate building with vaulted ceilings and stained glass, open 24 hours of the day. Arlise entered the church around 11:30 p.m., while Bruce returned to their apartment. When she didn't come home by 3 a.m., he became worried and called campus security. Stephen Crawford, a security guard at Stanford, claimed to have checked the church around that time and found the doors locked. Nothing appeared out of place, but when the doors were opened again around 5:30 a.m., Crawford made a horrific discovery. Arlise's body was found near the altar, and the scene was so disturbing it made headlines for decades. She had been brutally murdered and then posed in what appeared to be a deliberate and ritualistic way.
Ew.
She was lying on her back with her arms extended and legs spread apart. Her jeans had been cut or torn open, and her blouse was pushed up to expose her chest. A 5-inch ice pick, hence the drink, was still lodged in her skull, the apparent cause of her death.
Oh, no!
One altar candle had been inserted into her vagina, and another was placed between her breasts.
Don't do
her
that.
Her head was turned gently to the side, and that's how they found her.
Oh, I hate it.
There was no sign of an assault, sexual assault. She had committed the crime and locked the doors behind them. Police quickly sealed off the scene, and the symbolic nature of the posing and use of religious items sent shockwaves through the community. It wasn't just a murder, it looked like a message.
Well,
I
get that people would say that, but to me, maybe it's just because I'm not a religious person. I feel like I see it more as just opportunistic. Like she just happened to be there and they used the things that were closest to defile her.
Yeah, I don't know, but I don't know how I really, I think it could go either way because it was like posing a body like that. Like if you're just going to use opportunistic, you probably wouldn't take the time to like put it in a pose.
I'm just saying that I don't view it as like a religious thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think you're
the
right.
Posing.
I don't think it was like intentionally a religious thing.
And
but
the
I think it was just
use
a,
of like the candles and things
them
like
if
that.
They were in a parking lot or something like that. Yeah.
I mean, they were That's, like, okay, cool, right there. There's a candle right there. I don't know.
So initially, investigators looked closely at Bruce Perry, as spouses often are the first suspects, but he had an alibi and passed a polygraph, and his timeline lined up. No physical evidence tied him to the crime. Bruce completely cooperated and was cleared relatively quickly. Then turned to other possible suspects, including Stephen Crawford, the security guard who discovered the body. He claimed he found the doors locked at 3 a.m. and again when he returned at 5:30, but investigators found this timeline vague and inconsistent. Still, no hard evidence tied him to the scene. In 1974, DNA testing was decades away.
Yeah.
Multiple theories began to form.
Of course.
The graphic and symbolic positioning of Arlisa's body led to theories of ritualistic murder possibly committed by a satanic cult. This
of
was kind
course.
Of around the time of the satanic panic, so.
Yeah. Well, this before satanic panic, that's like 80s.
Okay.
Didn't you say it was 74?
Okay. Yeah, 74.
I think well, like the satanic
that,
panic shit
was
in
the
80s.
Hippie time.
70s is kind of post hippie. 70s is disco era mostly.
Oh, okay. I
think it's before Satanic Panic.
So a couple of theories even tied her death to the Son of Sam case in New York. Serial killer David Berkowitz. From prison, he claimed in letters that Nationwide Cult had committed murders across the country, and he specifically mentioned Arlisa Perry's name, claiming she was murdered in relation for the attempts of to evangelize a member of the group.
Ew. I don't like that.
Yeah. But investigators found no solid link, but the fact that he's mentioning her name, he could just be spouting bullshit, though, but...
Yeah.
Others believe the murder wasn't satanic, but rather psychosexual in nature. The idea that the killer may have had deep sexual resentment towards religious women and used a sacred place in church to act out his anger, extremely symbolic and violent way. Suspicion always hovered over Stephen Crawford, though, the security guard, who was conveniently the last at the church and the first to discover the body. He was also reportedly familiar with the church to the point of being, like, there all the time because he's a security guard. They're open 24 hours a day, so.
Okay.
Probably goes there, kick out people if they're being annoying or something, but. Crawford had worked at Stanford in various roles since the early 60s, including as a police officer, but was fired from the police force under suspicious circumstances. Crawford's alibi didn't fully hold up either, and some investigators suspected that he may have locked the doors himself, stayed inside with Arlisa, and committed the murder during a shift. Again, with no DNA evidence or eyewitnesses, there was no way to prove it, and the case eventually went cold.
Ugh.
In 2018, nearly 44 years after the murder, modern forensic technology finally delivered investigators what they had hoped for. Once DNA was performed on semen found at the crime scene, something that hadn't been around when the murder happened, matched Stephen Crawford, the security guard.
No!
Yeah.
The security guard?
Yeah. When police went to arrest him at his apartment in California, he did something that both shocked and unexpected. He pulled a gun out and fatally shot himself as officer entered his apartment.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Inside
the home, they found evidence tying him to the murder, and the DNA results left little to doubt. He was her killer.
Whoa. Wow.
Crazy story, huh?
I have not heard that story. Where have I been? Have I been under a rock?
Yeah, it's crazy, huh?
Holy cow. That is wild.
Just as soon as the cops come in, just shoot yourself.
Jeez. Well, I mean, definitely makes me wonder, like, how many people are out there? How many criminals have done something, whether it's a murder or a really big crime? They did it decades ago and they're like, DNA didn't exist back then, and now they're just waiting for...
Yeah, they have the evidence there. I mean,
yeah, they're just waiting for the shit to
viable, but
get caught. Yeah. Wow. My goodness. Whoa. Well, you just threw me for a loop on that one. I was not expecting that. What a jerk.
Well, yeah, just, you know, you're guilty and you just pop yourself before the police. It's also so many years later. Like,
yeah,
you thought you got away and then all of a sudden you hear the squad car pull up or something, or you look out your window and it's like, oh, my time's come.
45 years later, practically.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's... I just can't even imagine.
Yeah.
Wowza.
Interesting story.
Okay. My goodness. Well, are we ready to hear about brain stuff?
Yes. Don't. I hope this doesn't make me sick or like.
Feel it won't.
Gross. Okay.
There's no grossness. There's no grossness in this one. I don't even really talk about the brain much because it's so like people, they don't know. Researchers don't even really have an explanation as to why this happens.
Okay.
So we're not even. I mean, I talk about the brain for like a second. It's not even that long. But essentially, for people who don't know, synesthesia, it's like tasting colors or seeing sounds. That's a very basic way to think about it. And so, some people don't even know that that's a possible thing. And we're here to tell you it is.
Do you remember Ratatouille?
Yeah.
When he's eating the strawberries and it's like color, it's just him eating a fruit and like there's colors flashing on the screen and stuff. That's kind of what I imagine when I think of this.
I remember the movie and I know that I saw it, but I don't remember that part. But yes, that could be basically synesthesia.
It like people who know what I'm talking about, I think that's the best way to describe it. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
It's a neurological condition in which the sensory or cognitive pathways in the brain are connected and cross over. That's the basic definition of it, but we're going to get into some specific examples. It is an unusual condition with an estimated amount of people that are affected by it, about 3 to 5%. They can't really say how many because some people that have it, they think don't even realize that it's an anomaly. And that's how they just survive. That's their day to day. Why would you think that that's weird? Until you hear that somebody else goes, "That's, I don't have that." And then you go, "Oh." Historically, the first noted.
I think you'd know. I mean, I love food. And if you're eating like, "Oh my gosh, this food is so green." Or like.
True.
This food is making me see red.
If you described it that way. Yeah. Other people would.
When you eat good food with people.
There's lots of different kinds.
Oh, this is so good. But. Oh, true.
Yes.
If it wasn't the food. Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying now.
Right. The first noted episode of this was documented in 1690 when a blind man reported experiencing the color scarlet when he heard trumpet music. Which.
That's interesting.
I don't know the historical reference of this. I don't quite understand how a blind man could describe scarlet. I don't know. That was.
Not
in the
born
research.
Blind, but turned blind?
Possibly. That is something that does happen to people who acquire blindness later in life that they report it after the fact. Maybe that was the case in this. I don't know. Skeptics believe this description was merely a metaphor, though. It's 1690. Who knows? Not like they tracked and recorded that kind of shit that many years ago. So I don't know if it was the first reported case or not. The first medical documentation, though, was in the 1800s, and that subject reported synesthesia. Regardless of when it's recognized in history, it is something that is currently reported. We know that it could go back a few decades or a few thousands, hundreds, a long time. Who knows exactly when, regardless. Basically, the brain is processing something in more than one sense. So the description is there's a primary effect, like smelling something or seeing something, that we normally experience as a sensory input. And it's just one thing, like hearing a sound and recognizing it as music. People with synesthesia also have a secondary effect, and it is the brain's crossing over into another sense that would not normally have been triggered by the primary input. So you hear a sound and you see a color. That's the secondary effect.
I'm so
jealous
of that. It seems like it'd be so cool. Like,
agreed.
I'm sure there's probably downsides to it at some point, but like if you're driving and you listen to music and you can't see the green light because everything's green.
Well, we're going to talk. That brings me to the next point, that some people are projectors and some people are associators. And the difference is that projector types are commonly known, and they experience things like seeing colors, forms, or shape when their ability is stimulated. Associators are different in that they describe feeling a strong and involuntary connection between the stimulus and the sensation triggers. So, essentially, if you're a projector, you could physically see the color with the music, but an associator would get the feeling of the color. Does that make sense? A little different.
I guess.
Here's an example. That's very confusing.
Feeling of
I get
color
it.
Is very confusing.
Yes. So here's a specific example. Imagine a sound like a musical instrument. A projector could report seeing a shape or color, red triangle, red color, hazy something. When hearing the instrument, say it's a trumpet, say it's a piano, whatever. You hear a piano and you see triangles in association. An associator would think the sound itself represents a color. So you hear a sound and you think the color red. You don't physically see it like an image projected in front of you.
Okay.
Those that report visual effects of synesthesia can experience it in different ways. For some, the brain translates the secondary effect into the visual pathways, so it appears to them as a true visible item, while others, it is like an internal screen in their mind. The difference being that you imagine seeing it versus you actually physically believe there's a red triangle in front of you, even though you're just hearing a sound. I think it would be cool. For some, the brain translates the secondary effect into the visual pathways. I think I just said that.
Are you going to talk about the...
Cut that out.
All the famous people that have it?
Yes. Okay. Not all of them, but some of
them. I'll cut this part out, but...
Okay. It is possible to have any combination of senses be linked to each other. However, there are some common ones. There's potentially
hundreds. Smell and music? Like you hear a bad song.
It
and
could
it
be.
Like
it could be for sure.
Okay.
No reason that it couldn't be. These are. I'm going to list off some common ones because there's potentially hundreds of them, and we don't have all day to talk about them. Auditory tactile. Where specific sounds cause a physical sensation of being touched. So you hear a sound and you feel like somebody is holding your hand or touching your back.
Oh, I don't like that. Something like that. That's awful. That's horrible.
Agreed. I don't like that either.
A bump in the day night color. And just feel someone like,
ugh. Yeah. Ugh. If you're just, especially if you didn't know,
like Lulu just runs around in the middle of the night and I just hear like little crashes and stuff, just her bouncing off the wall and stuff, and it's like,
right,
ugh.
Imagine you if you felt
synesthesia and someone's like, you hear that and it just
grabbing like your foot,
like grabbing you, yeah, ugh.
No, thank
cool.
you.
I don't like that.
Day color is where days of the week are represented to the person as different colors. Sunday is red. Monday is blue.
What?
Yeah.
What does that mean? They just see that color for the day? Or they wear that color t-shirt for the day?
Maybe. But the day
fishy.
Itself
that sounds made up.
Is a color to them.
Okay.
Chromesthesia is also called sound color. It's the association of sounds with colors and has been described like seeing a fireworks display when certain sounds are heard, while another person described seeing waves and lines when listening to music. So when we're recording, you can see the wave pattern of us talking. Some people that have chromesthesia, when they hear sounds, they see the wave of it.
They
versus...
have an equalizer in their brain.
Yes.
That's funny.
Grapheme color is where letters or numbers are represented by a specific color. So not just days of the week, but an A is red and a B is green. Why? I don't know. Because they have interesting brains. Kinesthetic is one of the more rare forms in which people experience movement or sensation of movement when they experience other senses like sound. So again, this is not necessarily a person touching you, but movement itself. Not the touching, but the movement. Lexical gustatory is another one of the more rare forms. For this, people report having specific tastes associated with specific words. You had mentioned ratatouille and tasting things and seeing colors and explosions and things. Mm-hmm. This would kind of go along with that.
But so if they hear a word, they think of a, like someone says strawberry and they think of the taste of strawberry.
Or they hear the word grass and they think of shrimp.
Steak.
Maybe.
Okay.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting one, unless it's just bad flavors. It's like coffee or.
Yeah. Like dog poop.
Something bitter. Yeah. Earwax.
Another one is hearing motion. This is when people perceive a sound in conjunction with movement. Similar to like the kinesthetic, but kind of the reverse. This one, I don't think I would want this. This one is called mirror touch. And it's when someone has the feeling the same sensation as another person that they are observing. Like if you see someone being touched on the hand, then you feel like you're being touched on the hand.
What's it called when like you see someone get killed in a movie in a weird way and it like makes someone gets stabbed in the stomach in a movie and it feels like you can imagine the pain. I have that. Like
maybe you have mirror touch synesthesia.
No, not, it's not like, it's just like, when someone's falling in a movie, my stomach drops.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I feel like that's just a normal thing, though. Or like, perhaps. If someone breaks their leg, like, I think about, like, I could imagine
how
the
that
pain,
would hurt.
Like, the ghost pain, I guess.
I think that's more that you're empathizing with the person.
Yeah. It's like an empathetic thing, but
yeah.
Still.
I don't like it. Number form is the involuntary mapping of numbers in your brain. If you hear a string of numbers, you see it on like a map.
The involuntary part of that, that name is what makes me nervous. Involuntary mapping of numbers? Like,
but if that's how you saw, if you just saw numbers in a map, that would be normal to you.
But what does that even mean? Numbers, like a constellation? Like if you're reading a phone number, it's like a constellation or what? What does that mean?
The graphic that I saw was like a roller coaster where it like went up and down. Up and down,
like,
and along that roller coaster of up and down were the numbers. Like 24,
like
32, kind of like a graph. Another one is ordinal linguistic personification. Lots of words. That is meaning, it's also called sequence personality synesthesia. Again, lots of words. This is where sequences of things like numbers, days, or months, you're going to love this one, have a personality or gender assigned to them by the person with the ability. So a number, 24, their personality is that they're a happy person. 24 is a happy number, where 32, that's a sad number. I don't know.
So you just pick your mood based
it's in
on
there.
The day that you wake up.
Maybe. But it's a consistent thing. That's the thing with synesthesia, that when they test it to see if somebody has it, it's consistent. So one of the things that they do is test people that report this repeatedly to see if their ability in the first round of testing matches the third, fourth, fifth round of testing. If they actually have it, it's consistent. If they don't have it and it's just a learned association, then they don't typically retain that association when they're tested about it later at another time. That makes sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Another one is spatial sequence. Essentially, people with this condition see time occurring around them and they have the ability to recall things in great detail from their memory. Yes, these people have like perfect memory of a day and a time and everything that happened because they physically see time happening
like
all around
them. Like a flashback
them.
In a movie?
I guess.
Or like a video
game? I don't know.
Huh.
That sounds wild.
That sounds really
cool. The last one I'm going to talk about, again, this is not an exhaustive list.
Like, this many versions of it.
There's potentially over 150 different types of synesthesia.
These are like superpowers, it sounds like.
For sure. Ticker tape synesthesia is when people mentally see words, sometimes as if it were typed or written on paper when they hear a word.
You just have subtitles on everything?
That would be so cool. It would be really convenient.
It would be really nice. Some people I can't understand. I'm sure a lot of people can understand me.
I need subtitles.
Subtitles would be cool.
Misophonia is another one. This one you might have heard of before, but not in this context. You and I have talked about misophonia. Yes, this is the chewing one.
Okay. Yeah.
And we've heard about it in reference to having very sensitive hearing, especially irritating noises like someone chewing, like we just said. In the synesthesia world, it's in reference to having strong negative emotional connections to specific sounds. Not only is the chewing like irritating you, but it's making you angry or sad.
It's like a PTSD response, sounds like.
Yeah.
You hear fireworks.
Some researchers.
Gunshot.
Yes. But it's not, I mean, we're going to talk about sometimes it's an acquired thing. Some researchers think that the person's hearing is normal, but they live in a heightened sense of emotion. It's not that the chewing is, you're not picking up on it necessarily is because you can hear birds outside or you can hear very small sounds. You have normal hearing. You just are very emotionally responsive. So when you have this misophonia, if a sound is attached to the emotional sense, then they trigger each other. Basically, when a connection between a particular sound and an emotional part of the brain become connected, then it elicits a response. Like I said, kind of a comprehensive list, but it's not exhaustive. There have been around 80 different types of synesthesia reported over the years, but many have not been studied. Because there are so many combinations that occur between the senses, it's possible that there are even more types. Think about you have five main senses. Those five could connect to any of the others in any pattern. And it doesn't just have to be one. It could be your sight is connected to your hearing and your taste, or just the hearing, or just the taste, or hearing, taste, and all of it. It could be all of them.
One, but only for good taste. It's like, oh, now you taste strawberry shortcake, or now you taste a rack of ribs.
That'd be nice.
Or, yeah.
Exactly. Things that you like. Most synesthetes developed the ability as children. Some researchers believe that it is actually a normal developmental condition that everyone has, but at some point, most people lose the abilities as they grow up. Some people acquire it related to different forms of brain trauma, like stroke, epilepsy, physical head trauma, and even tumors. It's not just something that people have since childhood.
Wake up one day after getting hit in the head. And
yes.
Now they can see colors or smell colors or whatever.
They can taste sounds. In people with acquired versions, it is sometimes just temporary. Researchers have also found that it can occur during meditation, sensory deprivation, and even psychedelic drug use. So magic mushrooms might help you to taste sounds. I
mean, yeah, everyone knows that. Well, not everyone, but it's just common sense. That's what hallucinating is.
For those who have synesthesia with drug use, it can also be affected by emotions. It can change based on your focus and can cause hallucinations that further change your experience.
Yeah.
So
this has happened to me.
The psychedelic drugs, you think it's a hallucination, but it could actually be synesthesia where you're crossing over your senses.
I'm sure it unlocks something inside your brain that allows you to synesthetize.
Sure. We're just going to make up a new word.
Synesthetized. That's
sure.
But yeah, just for me, at least you put on the music and it warps the what's happening around you. Without getting into too much detail, but like
if you were to try and focus on that, you could change it, is what they're saying. So if you were tasting the colors, or you were you're listening to music and now you see a color, if you focused on it, you could change it.
So I had a color changing light that I could, it like went through the rainbow, but I put it on like a super slow delay so it would stay on a color for a second or two, put music on and close my eyes so you could see the light through your eyelids, but there was a song playing and you could kind of like, it would lead the hallucinations.
Right. I'm just saying that those hallucinations, what you thought were hallucinations, could actually be synesthesia. Here's another thing.
That's an interesting point. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know where the distinction is between a hallucination and synesthesia. I think depending on who you're talking to, they could argue it either way. It's the drugs. It is 6 times more common in women than men and strongly believed to be genetically linked. But genetically related people do not typically have the same types of synesthesia, so it's not a learned behavior. Meaning, if I had synesthesia, you could have synesthesia, but because my synesthesia could be tasting colors and yours could be something completely different.
That's interesting.
And it would be genetically linked, but not learned. If I had synesthesia and I tasted colors, you could taste colors and it would just be something you heard me talking about as you were growing up. And I talked about, that apple tastes yellow.
It's purple.
Yes, it's a purple. This is a purple berry, you know, something along those lines. It's also three times more likely in people who are on the autism spectrum.
Is that what blue raspberry came from?
Maybe.
Someone ate a raspberry and they thought it was blue.
Maybe. I've always wondered about blue raspberry. It annoys the shit out of me.
But it's so good. Blue raspberry flavoring is so good.
I don't disagree with you, but it's not blue. But
it tastes blue. Maybe though. That's the thing.
Maybe that's where it came from. We should look into that.
Blue raspberry.
If anybody out there knows the origination of blue raspberry, maybe it's that. I hadn't thought about that, but you might be right. You might be right. Let's talk about some specific cases now. You wanted to know specific people who had it. And some of these are from other countries, and so I'm going to butcher the names. Solomon Sharashevsky was a Soviet journalist who had five-way synesthesia. Remember how I talked about how it could be any combination of the connections? For Solomon, words were associated with visual spatial imagery, as well as taste, sound, color, and sensation. So he could see pictures and taste, hear, see a color, and feel it as well. I don't know how that would not be overwhelming to the brain, but apparently he had that. Vladimir Nabokov was a writer who had grapheme color synesthesia, and he described it as color hearing. He would experience colors by speaking a letter and imagining the outline of the letter. I know. No. I don't. It's amazing to me.
It's confusing to like kind of contextualize.
Yes.
Because like they can explain it, but you can't. You can think of what it could be, but it could be a million different things because it's hard to. If you're seeing this, it's hard to explain it to someone else. Like,
if you saw the letter A and imagined writing the letter A, and then that was a color to you, represented a color to you, like.
See, I could see the writing part, and then the transition to the color is what. Is it like, does it turn their vision that color? Do they just think of it? Or is it like,
or maybe
someone holding a green card? Or
maybe they always see to them.
Like when you're reading like a book, it's all rainbow colored.
Yeah.
Like
how confusing would that be?
That would be.
But really, if that's your brain, you probably don't even, it doesn't even bother you.
Yeah, that's
it's super interesting.
That it's like kind of tripping because I'm trying to imagine it, and you go through each because it could be super like intense, or it could just be nothing. And you like, oh, you think of the color green, but it could be that when you read a book, it's rainbow colored. Like,
yeah, very rainbowy. Author Joanne Harris experiences colors as smells. I don't know if those are pleasant smells or bad smells. I don't know. Marsha Smilak is a photographer who waits to take a picture of something until her synesthesia is triggered. Then she takes a photo of what the trigger was. So she's walking around in the woods, I guess. And she's got her camera with her until she gets triggered. She doesn't take a picture, but then when she does, and I don't know what her triggers are. I didn't read that part.
What's her name? Martha Smilak?
Huh? Smilak. Marsha Smilak. Smilack. Yeah. I should have looked up like what kind of photographer she was. Another one is a music composer, Raman Djawadi. He's best known for his musical scores on Game of Thrones, Westworld, and Iron Man, the movie. He associates colors with music and vice versa. You might recognize this name. Kanye West is another musician with synesthesia. And he describes having the ability to see sounds and says that the music he makes is a way of painting.
I wonder what his new songs make him see.
Like, yeah. And there's actually quite a few musicians with the condition. including Billy Joel, Pharrell Williams, Billie Eilish, drummer Mickey Hart of the Grateful Dead, and guitarist John Frusciante from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, to name just a few.
That's cool.
Yeah.
All of them make really good music. I mean,
a bunch of musicians that were listed in the sources that I found. So it's pretty.
I looked up the Marsha Smilak.
Smilak.
Her pictures are really cool. They're like reflections off of water.
Mm.
Like it's really mesmerizing to look at. Why she.
I'm gonna look. Oh,
they're really interesting.
Right, I love it.
Like
I love it.
They almost look painted.
They do.
Like, it's weird.
They look like somebody painted, and while the paint was wet, they smeared it.
Yeah, like the buildings specifically, they look like paintings. But then there's just a couple of pictures of just water, like not really much reflection other than the surface of the water, and it looks really cool. But then there's some that have like buildings in the background, and they look hand painted. It's interesting.
Definitely. I love it.
Yeah, that'd
She's
be a cool
described as a reflectionist. Wow. Super cool. See, I told you that it wouldn't make you skeeve out. I wasn't going to make you feel icky.
Really interesting.
Talking about brain stuff. Do you have a chaser for us?
Yes, my chaser is another audio drama. This one is Station 151. And it's like a sci-fi mystery thriller type thing. It's kind of like AI taking over. Like, it's kind of the theme of it. It's pretty interesting.
Like it.
But it's, I'm not going to say it's a slow build, but the second season is really weird. It's really interesting. I enjoy it a lot, but there's parts of it that I'm like, oh, this is kind of corny a little bit. There's a corny aspect, but
I don't like
it's a really
the
good
concept
listen.
Of AI taking over. I'm just going to say that. I don't like it.
Yeah. Listening to this, it's like kind of scary because they use like basically a Neuralink, and the AI has control over it and can put you to sleep. And
I'm out.
It's
you're not putting anything in my brain. Not doing
it. It's like a horror type deal too. It's really good. Listen, I like the horror audio dramas though, because they're more interesting usually, but. Yeah, it's a good listen if you guys like those.
Thought of anybody
dramas.
Having control of my brain? No, I'm out. Nope.
And I want to explain what it's really about, but I don't want to give any spoilers.
Give it away.
Like, I explained as much as I could without revealing anything past episode two. Like, it gets really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. I'll have to check it out.
What's your chaser, Mom?
My chaser is a book series recommendation, and it ties into synesthesia. The author is Dee Dee Black, and it's the Thomas Austin book series. I think there's like 12 or something in there. I think I've read 3 of them so far. But the main character, Thomas Austin, is a retired police officer, and he has synesthesia. So when he experiences an emotion, he gets a taste. And they talk about it during the book, where if he's nervous about something, he'll have the taste of bitter lemons or something. I don't remember the exact, because they don't harp on it a lot, but they do bring it up. And I've recommended this book series to a couple of my friends. And it's just an interesting little part that comes up in the story occasionally. And it's kind of interesting. So I recommend it. It's a good little read. It's like,
I have a audiobook,
kind of,
because I do like audiobooks because it's kind of boring to listen to podcasts.
Yeah, I don't know if there's audio versions of it or not. I'd have to go look it up.
Because I listen to so much stuff, it's nice to just listen to an audiobook sometimes.
Agreed. Agreed.
Like on a podcast episode, I want to do just listen to an audiobook version of it. And
it's kind of nice because you get to listen to it for a little longer. When you're listening to podcasts, it's over in a half hour to an hour.
Yeah.
And then you're like, ugh, now I still have 7 hours to work.
Audio dramas, because you like,
yeah,
some of them are 1 to 2 seasons and that they're 30 minutes long and it's 6 episodes. It's 3 hours that I'm listening to kind of like a story progress.
Yeah.
That's why I like those. Like I've finished that one in a day and a half, 2 days. The one I just talked about, mm-hmm. but that's perfect amount of time because listening to audio for probably 10 hours a day because of driving to work, coming back, and
and at
cooking
work
or
and
doing chores or whatever, just listening to stuff. So
yeah, it's nice to break it up a little while.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of today's episode. Is that
it? Does
is that right?
It is.
Thanks for
your
everybody
story.
Yeah, I
and surprising me with the ending.
I didn't realize there was so many different versions of it, which is interesting.
Oh, neither did I.
Yeah,
I thought it was just a couple things, but no.
I thought it was just the
potentially
color and food
hundreds
and taste,
yeah,
and stuff like that. But
I'd be on board with that.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Love you, Mom.
Love you, bud. Bye.
Hey, friends. Thank you for supporting our podcast. Please share our show with your brutal and bizarre friends. Give us a boozy follow on your favorite podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, we'd appreciate a 5-star rating or review as well. But maybe do that sober so all the letters are in the right place.
You can find all our contact information in the show notes. We love hearing from you, and if you're interested in helping us stock the bar for our future boozy episodes, you can find our Patreon link in the show notes as well.